The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Tuesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we're going to take you around the coaching carousel before we head to the bowling alley with some items that you're going to need to know. Is it now Athos, Porthos, Holloway, and Lyons? And we hope tonight that we have the right stuff in Madison Square Garden when we add another ticket to our portfolio.
Well, speaking of the right stuff, Dave, last night, Monday Night Football, college hoops on center stage. What's your first take that you want to share with our viewers?
First take is getting the first partial on our play of the day of DePaul, when you knew the game had already been lost, the first score that flashes. Fortunately, we didn't have to watch it. Sitting at our favorite bar stool over at the Barrymore, the official restaurant of Vegas Sports Day. And by the way, you guys should get over there in the next week or two. Wonderful house-made fettuccine with winter truffles. A little bit of Parmesan cheese, a little cracked black pepper, but this truffles of the star. You might want to get over there before those truffles are all shaved off. So, okay, here comes the score. You've got no chance to win. You don't particularly care. The food's good. You've got good company. How did it happen? How did we go so wrong? Well, of course, we always have to do our own postmortems on every game we play in. And we find out that maybe it wasn't so wrong after all. When you talk about a spin of the roulette wheel, two different players for Wisconsin-Milwaukee went 5 for 5 from three-point range. When was the last time any team had two players go 5 for 5 or better from three-point range? According to the guy who looked it up for us, never. They just simply shot lights out in a way that we could not have anticipated, and we'll certainly factor that in for both teams the next time they take the court. Teddy, outside being a little under the weather, were you awake enough to watch anything last night, or did you pretty much sleep through from show to show?
No, I was awake enough to watch the first half of football, but I want to ask you about this DePaul, Wisconsin-Milwaukee, because we've now had DePaul twice on our card, and both times they've been trailing by margin at halftime. Both times they made a second-half run. Both times they came up short. Do we ever play DePaul again? Do we look at DePaul maybe in a different role, or is this when we lose with the team twice in a matter of a week, is this a situation where you say, all right, I'm wrong about the Blue Demons, I'm going to look elsewhere, or is this a fact, hey, let's look for them in a different role? Well, I mean, what's your reaction to DePaul from here on out?
Yeah, there's a temptation to come right back.
Yep.
Off of a game like last night, when you see that sort of a shooting extreme, because now the markets are based on power ratings a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So when people go to look at the Sagarin ratings, they look at the Pomeroy ratings, that final score is going to carry a lot of weight.
Mm-hmm.
That type of shooting, if it had never happened before, probably isn't likely to happen that much going forward. We may actually get value with DePaul the next time out. Yeah, we'll go to the window one more time.
Exactly, and that's one of the conundrums that you always have as a handicapper is what do you do with a team? You've lost them a couple times. You still feel like your read on this team is correct. I mean, Wisconsin-Milwaukee, they shot 80% in the first half. They were up by 23 early on or in that ball game. And, you know, sometimes that's going to happen, and some of that has to do with DePaul's defense. A lot of it had to do with Wisconsin-Milwaukee really being hot, and perhaps there will be opportunities to get involved with the Blue Demons down the line. My first take, Dave, I'm a little bit under the weather. No question about it. And yesterday, when all the craziness is going on with the bowl lines, I'm sleeping. I was able to wake up for a little bit and watch some football in the first half, watch St. John's lose to Detroit. Saw that first Wisconsin-Milwaukee score, I went right back to bed. It was about, 14 hours of sleep between yesterday's show and this day's show. And the bottom line, when you're a little bit under the weather, and it kind of happens, it got cold in Vegas. For all of you wondering, yeah, it gets below freezing in Vegas, below freezing last night. It's not 110 out here all year long, certainly not in December. But, you know, you go on a plane for Thanksgiving, the workload increases, Kara was sick, Isaac had a little cold, you know, and I fought it off for a good week after I got back, and then yesterday it was just like, ugh. So what happens when I get sick? That's real simple. Two factors. One, Kara hates me. I'm a big jerk. All guys are, aren't we all just jerks when we get sick?
No, you know? Not yeah. all of us.
I am. You know, I'm a little bit short, perhaps, you know, just a wee bit short. And of course, the other thing that you have to be aware of on today's show is that a lot of times when I get sick, I'll just have this look like, you know, which you guys need to be aware of today. If I have that look once or twice on the show, doesn't mean I'm completely out of it. Just having a momentary lapse of reason. All right, let's shift focus, talk about Market Watch. First, the new lines off the two teams that played on Monday Night Football last night. Jacksonville-Tampa Bay, that game is off until Josh Freeman's status is known. A couple of books have posted what I'll call rogue numbers on that contest, likely to come out in the range of Pick'em and 38, somewhere within a point of that, I would think, as the openers. San Diego, the Chargers off of last night's resounding win. Yeah, 6.5, 47 at home over Buffalo. The early money in that game has come in on the over, total getting up to 47.5. But really, the big news today is the breaking news on the Heisman Trophy odds watch. Dave, less than a month ago on this show, you talked about Robert Griffin III being good value at 75-1. 75-1, less than a month ago. What's the number right now?
I think it was slightly more than a month ago. But this was at, of course, at Olympic. So we weren't sure how available that 75 was at other places. But here's what's been breaking now in the past 24 hours. One of the online books that probably is writing more action on the Heisman than any others had a huge run on Robert Griffin. As we go on the air, he's now minus 500. Apparently yesterday was around like a plus 300, plus 400, and it was bet after bet. We don't know if it were different bettors all coming in or one guy just pounding it and pounding it to a certain level. He's now minus 500. The others in that trading right now, you've got Richardson at plus 250, Luck at plus 300, Ball plus 1500, and Matthew at 20-1. So a huge move to Griffin. Keep in mind that could be legitimate inside information. Votes are in. Balloting's all done. When you see that type of bet being made, maybe somebody knows something. It's a little bit heartwarming, yes, not because of the reference we made on the show earlier, but the fact that, and we'll talk about this tomorrow, a special post-mortem segment on Griffin. We almost moved it up to today because of this. Been watching college football for a long time. This race shouldn't be close. And we're serious about this. People say, boy, you've got Luck, you've got Richard. It shouldn't even be close this year. Robert Griffin, from a Heisman Trophy standpoint, has been far and away better than anyone else. We will break that down in our college post-mortem tomorrow, talking about the specific numbers. But if this is right, Teddy, it sort of reaffirms my faith a little bit in the voters for this, because I thought that all of these public teams, the Alabamas and whatnot, were going to get the attention that Griffin did not get. Maybe some of these voters earned some respect.
Yeah, I'm a little bit shocked, to be honest, by the current numbers and by the five guys who were on the list to go to the Downtown Athletic Club in New York in a couple of weeks. I didn't think Ball would be on that list. Monty Ball, no question, he had a monster year. But it also shows how important it is, because I'm telling you, I'll take the over 80% of the voters don't watch more than one college football game a week until maybe the last week or two of the season. So it's what you do in those TV games over the last couple of weeks. Robert Griffin had a big game against Texas. Andrew Luck, not the same type of numbers. His status has dropped when it comes to Heisman. But the fact that Ball, you know, off his monster game against Michigan State, will be invited to the Downtown Athletic Club, and not Russell Wilson, the guy who Wisconsin and the national media has been hyping all year for this award. It means the voters paid attention for about a week. That's what they do.
In some ways, it's nice to just at least see Tyrann Mathieu even being there.
Yes.
You know, we sort of like that. If it's Andrew Luck, we certainly couldn't fault that. Andrew Luck might be the best player. Not necessarily did he have the best season. But Trent Richardson just kind of bothered us a little bit. He had a good season for Alabama. That was about it. He had a good season. Take that same season in a different uniform, same stats, same numbers. He's probably not there. So it would sort of reaffirm our faith in one particular poll that we had not had a lot of faith in the past.
Yeah. Hey, 75-1 in your pocket, Mr. Malinsky.
Unfortunately, that's not in my pocket.
Brutal.
Not in the pocket.
We told them about it. It didn't happen. You know, bottom line is, at 75-1, you know, you don't need to get a lot of those right to make a lot of money. Stay tuned here on Vegas Sports Day for more of these type of suggestions. But for right now, we need to talk about those emails. This is your show. We got some great questions. We're going to answer them in our next segment. Keep the emails coming. SportsDay@covers.com. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at Vegas Sports Day. And new link gets you sends you direct to the posting forum, covers.com/posting forum. That's singular. You can get involved in the covers.com community right now. When we come back, postmortem.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
No pressure. Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from, can't think of the name on my damn show, Golf and Other Four-Letter Words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. We're going to go to the postmortem. We're going to take you deep inside the game to show you things that you should have seen. And also, perhaps, in this segment, we might actually be doing Teddy's postmortem, you know, if he doesn't hang on. So he's bearing with us. He's fighting for us today. Let's get to it. The things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
I resolve not to die on air today. Tomorrow, maybe. Not today.
Well, you've died on air a few times already.
No question. We've talked several times about the things we look for in terms of college basketball teams winning close games late. You know, you're looking for good coaching. You need the right adjustments at both ends of the court and, of course, clock management. You're looking for experience at point guard where, you know, get teams into the right plays, get guys in position where they like to shoot the basketball. You're looking for a go-to player to take the big shot. You know, a team that has that type of a guy tend to be good in these tight contests. And, of course, we're looking for free throw percentages. Not just looking at the team, but the guys who would most likely be shooting the ball at the end of the game, or the free throws at the end of the game. So when we flash a photo here of Xavier's Mark Lyons, you probably think we're going to reinforce these notions after Lyons and backcourt make two Holloway led a pair of dramatic escapes versus Vanderbilt and Purdue last week. But in this case, there's another element that needs to come into the forefront, and we'll let Dave take it under the scalpel right now.
We're going to ask a question as to how many of you can name all four of the Musketeers, because really we're four, not three. But it sets this up awfully, awfully well when you look at that spirit and camaraderie that they play with. That leads us back to our own young days, reading Dumas at a very early age, and also got lucky about a year and a half ago, found a copy of The Last Cavalier. Very, very difficult to find. The last thing Dumas wrote, something he didn't finish, but carries out to about 800 pages of awfully good entertainment. He could really carry a story. So can these two guards. Here's what's happened in the last two games. Now, you might think about, you know, the points scored at the end of games because that's what makes the headlines. And you read the headlines on Sunday about Xavier's rally to beat Purdue. Talk about Holloway hitting three big three-pointers in the final 2 minutes. But you know how they won those games? Those guys D'd up, and they D'd up in a big way. This might be the best defensive backcourt we've seen in college basketball in quite some time. Let's go back to that Vanderbilt game last week. Vanderbilt's got the lead at the four-minute TV timeout. From 3:57 in regulation till there was just 2:18 left in overtime, a span of over 7.5 minutes, Vanderbilt didn't score. Those guards would not allow Vanderbilt to get into their offense. They exerted so much pressure that Vandy just became flustered. Now, Vandy could be a Sweet 16 team. They were ranked in the preseason top 10. Now, on to Saturday, let's look at Purdue, another team certainly with Sweet 16 potential. A hardened road team with three seniors in that lineup. Purdue's up by 13 with 7:05 to play. What happens down the stretch? The final 6:26 of the game, Purdue doesn't make a basket. Only made a couple of free throws. Once again, a good veteran team couldn't find anywhere to go with the ball against that Xavier defense. So now, over the course of the season, we're going to like Xavier a lot in these close game situations. They've got the coaching. They'll make the free throws, but more than anything else, they're going to D up. They're going to make stops. And that's the hardest thing to find when you're doing your basketball charting. You'd have to look at the play-by-play elements or at the game flows. You're not going to have time to do that every day. We'll do that for you here at Vegas Sports Day. Looking at Matt Forte writhing in pain makes you think about Chicago Bears management, because they might be in even more pain right now. Forte's got a sprained MCL, going to be out for at least 2 games, it appears, but possibly more. As we alluded to in an Insider Six-Pack segment yesterday, Forte's sort of having an MVP season. You can't say it because Aaron Rodgers has just been in a different league and he's going to walk away with it. But when you look at his numbers and the impact he's had on the Bears, he's had that time of year. Teddy's going to talk about those numbers a little bit, but keep in mind that coming into this week, he'd almost caught twice as many passes as anybody else in the Bear roster. That's how much he means. They could have survived without Jay Cutler. Can they survive without Cutler and Forte? Probably not. So now there's a dilemma coming up at Hollis Hall. You're in contention to make the playoffs. You might have to make a move in order to do that. You might have to replace Matt Forte, because even though he could come back in 2 weeks, he might not.
Sure. We're talking about a guy, again, 997 rushing yards, 4.9 yards per carry. Darn good numbers. 52 receptions for 490 more yards. He led the NFL in yards from scrimmage before he got hurt. But we talked about it a little bit on the show, and it certainly made some national headlines. Those failed contract negotiations for Matt Forte in the preseason, negotiations that kind of went on in the first couple of weeks, and Forte looking, you know, this is a guy who's in his fourth season, and he's still under his rookie contract. So he was looking for that coveted extension, the type of extension that teams give when they want to lock up a star player. Well, the Bears decided they did not want to lock up Matt Forte at that time. And now it's a situation where it might be in his best interest, health-wise. He doesn't want to come back 50% or 70% or 80%, risk another injury. He doesn't have a contract for next year. It's in Matt Forte's personal self-interest to sit out until he's 100% healthy, and that's likely to be through the end of the Bears season. So while Chicago made that choice not to sign Forte, and I don't necessarily disagree with that choice, but the bottom line is now that has consequences, big consequences for a team that's struggling to make the playoffs.
When we come back, Matt Forte might not play hurt, but Teddy is today. We're going to answer your letters and talk about some college coaching situations that are going to matter for this year's bowls. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Hey, I'm Al Mann. Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it? Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Let's answer some of those questions that have been coming in. Again, send those questions sportsday@covers.com. We'll get to as many as we can. Good questions on air. This one comes from Ken L. He says, hi, guys. Is it time to start fading teams with rookie quarterbacks now that they have played 12 games, which is about what they would in a full college season, and especially ones with a tough recent schedule, such as Cincinnati? Fade the young QBs, yes or no?
So actually, it's a good question when he talks about that reference point, because that is when a lot of guys can start to break down physically and mentally just a little bit. We talked about Cincinnati on the show a couple of times in the last few weeks, indicating plays against them in money time segments, because it's a team that's wearing down. And also keep in mind, when you get these division rematches, it's the second look at the rookie quarterback. And you certainly see the Steelers did a much better job against him than in the first go-around. Some don't fit the mold, though, necessarily. Cam Newton, again, is just an entirely different beast. Physically, Cam Newton's not going to wear down. He's at a little different level. Mentally, we're not quite sure, because he hadn't played that much college football anyway. So he's not that accustomed to the shorter schedule. And keep in mind that Cam Newton had to go all the way into January last year. He almost played an extended NFL schedule. Some of the others, Blaine Gabbert, We might see some signs that he could wear down just a little bit. Doesn't have a supporting cast for it to show. But it's a good question, the way that was brought up about that particular timing.
Yeah, I was just going to bring up the Cam Newton situation. Cam Newton started 14 games at the college level last year, and most of those were against SEC defenses that, you know, no, they're not NFL level, but they're not bottom-tier defenses. He wasn't starting 14 games against WAC defense or something like that. And when you look at a QB like Cam Newton, and let's not forget, no preseason, you know, in terms of preseason action this year, there weren't all the OTAs, there weren't the hits that quarterbacks can take in July and August. That can have a further negative effect as we get here to December and January. So certain QBs you'd want to be aware of, but Cam Newton in particular, you know, the size that he has and what he was up against last year, he's one QB who I'm not particularly interested in betting against down the stretch.
Second letter today comes from Travis. It says, hey, love the show. Thank you, Travis. I have one basic question. When do you stop fading a fade team? I'd like to start looking more at fading cold teams and riding hot teams, but this is new to me.
Well, the answer here, and the concept that I'm trying to drive home when I talk about betting against bad teams, betting on good teams, betting against teams that are undervalued or overvalued, betting on teams that are undervalued, it's very simple. We're just looking for teams that the market is pricing incorrectly. How long do we go to the well, fading a bad team or fading a fade team or whatever you want to call them? Until the marketplace catches up. Sometimes the marketplace will catch up very quickly. I remember a Toledo basketball team last year. They stood out to me. Boy, coming into the season, I'm like, this team's going to stink. And I wanted to bet against Toledo right from the get-go, and they came out, they lost by 50 in their first game, by 40 in their next game. And guess what? Within 2 weeks, the market had caught up with how bad they were, and betting against Toledo was not a profitable endeavor, at least from my perspective. The market caught up quickly. It doesn't always happen that way, and you'll see big-time adjustments early in the season. The betting markets will adjust. You know, UNLV wins one game over North Carolina. Talk to Jay Cornegay over at the Hilton, the race and sportsbook director. How much do you adjust for that? He, 3 points. You know, that's 3 points to a power rating in every future UNLV game looking forward based on one win. So clearly you see some very dramatic adjustments in the month of November and even into December. But what happens is as the season progresses and as things start to move on, those adjustments become fewer and fewer, and the opportunities to fade some of these fade teams or back some of these undervalued teams, boy, you know, you get some real good opportunities in January and into February just riding hot teams and fading cold ones, and the marketplace doesn't seem to react as quickly or catch up nearly as quickly at that time of the year.
Now, what's the best time to get on? You know, it's before a team gets hot. Before they get cold. And that's what we're going to be doing daily in the college basketball. Anytime that we start a season, we didn't get a chance to start football with you. We will next fall. We'll be sort of isolating these situations where we can get ahead of the curve just a little bit. We thought we were going to do that with DePaul. That hasn't played out very well for us. But there are some others out there that we'll be alerting you to in the days and weeks ahead.
Yeah. So we wanted to go a little bit deeper into the coaching changes impacting bowl teams and how we can take advantage. So today, I'm going to pop the top on the Insider Six-Pack just a little bit early so we have a little bit more time to break down some of these coaching issues.
Be twisting a cap off of a NyQuil instead today? I mean, it just seems a little more natural.
A little bit flu-y. You know what? One beer right now, I'd be out like a light. It wouldn't take much, although I imagine one NyQuil would do probably about the same thing. But, yeah, sure, we'll twist the cap off the NyQuil just to keep Dave happy. And speaking of which, I didn't even get a chance to comment on this. Are you kidding me? Three Musketeers references? No wonder they call him the professor. You know, that's my Three Musketeers reference is when I'm sick, give me a candy bar. You know? Dumas! Okay, let's transition here into some Insider Six-Pack. I want to start with Arizona State in the Las Vegas Bowl against Boise. And Dennis Erickson, he's going to get the chance to go out a winner after all. He's going to remain the head coach through the game. And not only that, he's getting a $25,000 bonus for getting his team to a bowl game. Now, that's a good contract. You're getting fired? We'll give you $25K just for getting your team to 6-6 and match up in Las Vegas, but in the Las Vegas Bowl with the second biggest point spread of any, you're the second biggest underdog of any team in any bowl this year. But here's Erickson's quote that speaks volumes about Arizona State's potential enthusiasm for this contest. Quote, the goal at the beginning of the year for any college football team is to play in a bowl game. I am so proud of our players and my coaching staff. We are grateful to the Mako Bowl, Las Vegas, and the city of Las Vegas for giving us this opportunity. We are honored to be a part of it.
Can you believe a word of that? You know, I mean, because I almost wish we had a video where we could have shown him saying that, because that's like, oh, I have to say something. I hope they buy it. We weren't aiming for a bowl this year, you know, Arizona State. We were aiming for the Rose Bowl. We were aiming for the top 10. We kind of blew it. We went 6-6. I'm out of here. But now here's the problem, and we're going to address this with a couple of Pac-10 teams today. Going forward is a lot more difficult than they thought. UCLA and Arizona State thought they were plum programs. We're going to get to UCLA in a minute, but now let's look at this Arizona State shortlist. On top of it right now, June Jones. That's the best, apparently, that they're going to be able to do at this point in time. Kevin Sumlin looks like that's not going to happen. He's more likely to end up at Texas A&M. Maybe a chance at Larry Fedora from Southern Miss. They might even end up just promoting Noel Mazzoni, who's currently their offensive coordinator. But no, they do not have this big list of people beating the door down. It's possible that Arizona and Washington State, by acting quicker, may have beaten Arizona State and UCLA, both to the punch. But in terms of measuring Arizona State for the bowl game, the lack of enthusiasm that you saw from Erickson in that statement, it's likely to be the lack of enthusiasm that we may see from the team as they prepare to come to Las Vegas. Second team on our list is going to be Texas A&M, playing in the Meineke Car Care Bowl against Northwestern. Their status, Tim DeReuter, the defensive coordinator, will be the head coach in the bowl game, not Mike Sherman. They've got a pretty good short list, and we might see an announcement, in fact, coming out of A&M as early as tomorrow, or let's say an announcement coming from A&M, but maybe out of New York. National Football Foundation Hall of Fame ceremonies are taking place in New York right now. You've got a lot of the nation's best coaches there. So active interviews are going on yesterday and today. Athletic Director Bill Byrne yesterday sat down with Kevin Sumlin and Larry Fedora, someone I think would be their number one choice. Today he's going to interview with Alabama defensive coordinator Kirby Smart. Would also like to interview with Louisville head coach Charlie Strong. Louisville hasn't granted that permission yet, but we might see A&M make an announcement pretty soon. But DeReuter will be the head coach in the bowl game, maybe coaching to keep his job as a defensive coordinator. He was a disappointing season on that side of the ball. In terms of measuring the A&M enthusiasm, doesn't look terribly high. Like Arizona State, they're not excited to be in this bowl. It's a disappointment for them. They were expecting much better than 6-6.
Coming up, well, we've already cracked two beers on our Insider Six-Pack. Or NyQuil's or whatever. We've got four more to crack when we come back.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
We've talked about some of the least attractive bowl games, and certainly the UCLA-Illinois game with a combined 13 losses between the two teams. Illinois comes in on a six-game losing streak. UCLA comes in on two blowout losses. Not a pretty bowl game. We're going to get to both sides of this one. Let's start with the Bruins for this Kraft Fight Hunger Bowl. I'm not even going to use a Kraft. We're not going to. Is Kraft paying me to say that? No. We'll call it the Fight Hunger Bowl San Francisco. And Bruin offensive coordinator Mike Johnson is going to be taking over for the bowl as the head coach. Mike Johnson has been fairly nondescript, as UCLA's offense has been fairly nondescript under his tutelage, but he gets the head coaching job for this game. Now, the coaching search is getting very interesting because nobody wants the job. I mean, nobody wants it. Dan Peterson, I like Boise better. There are better opportunities. Kevin Sumlin, well, I'd rather stay at Houston than go to UCLA. Hey, we beat you guys already this year anyway. Al Golden, you know, do I want to go? Nah, I'm happy where I am. You know, Steve Mariucci, Jim Mora Jr., tired NFL retreads at the end of that. Well, I guess Mora Jr. isn't at the end of his career. He's just a clown who's waiting for the end of his career. Mariucci's, you know, well beyond. Dwayne Walker, the guy they fired before bringing in Rick Neuheisel. You know, he's an attractive option. Maybe he's had success turning around a pretty bad New Mexico State program.
Moving on to that same game, let's take the Illinois side of the picture. For the bowl game, it'll be defensive coordinator Vic Caining who will be taking over. We thought that Caining might be auditioning for the full-time job. We're being told no. They don't consider him to be a candidate for that. They're closing their application process at 3 p.m. today, but it looks like they've narrowed their focus down pretty well. Paul Christ, the offensive coordinator at Wisconsin, Pat Narduzzi, the defense coordinator at Michigan State, the two front runners. Now, we're going to update you on this as the days go by, because if they hire either of them, that means they might not stay in their current positions into the bowl game. Sometimes that can impact as much as a head coach if a coordinator is lost. But neither of those two, sort of a sleeper there. Todd Monken, the offensive coordinator at Oklahoma State, only been there for 1 year. He replaced Dana Holgorsen, was formerly the Jacksonville wide receivers coach before stepping up to that. Monken might not look like he's got a lot of experience, but he's from the Chicago area. They believe he could be a very good recruiter for them in a fertile market.
So, Dave, you said that that's a 3 p.m. today deadline, that Eastern time, Central time. Bottom line is you still have time to send in your resume if you want the Illinois head coaching job. Hurry.
You know? Oh, and UCLA. You've got all the time in the world to send your resume into UCLA. And Westwood's actually lovely.
At this time of year. A nicer place to hang out with than Champaign. Bottom line, come on. Let's be college head coaches. Penn State. You know, and this is a brutal job. Do you really want the Penn State job? Have we seen anyone come in anywhere off a legendary run from any head coach and kind of have that type of, I'm not talking about 5 years or 10 years, but when a guy's been there for 20 years, if you're trying to replace a Bo Schembechler or a Joe Paterno or a Bobby Bowden or whoever, you know, the biggest names in college football, hard to do. And not that you're going to turn down the Penn State job, but, you know, there's an issues here, no question. Penn State, they're underdogs in the Ticket City Bowl against Houston. You remember that Houston team that looked completely confused and distracted for their conference championship game? They're laying points here to a Penn State team that plays defense? Anyhow, defense coordinator Tom Bradley. He's going to remain the coach for the bowl game for the Nittany Lions. He has not been ruled out for the head coaching job. That being said, I would think that the school administration is going to want to make a clean break here. And that means that who are we looking at? Well, Chris Peterson from Boise, his name's been bandied about. Tim Murphy, the Harvard football head coach, his name's been bandied about. And then some other possibilities, Gary Patterson from TCU. His name seems to get thrown in the mix in a lot of high-profile jobs on an annual basis. Mike London, who's had great success in 2 years with Virginia. You've got Jim Grobe, who's obviously had success at Wake Forest. And maybe Packers assistant Darren Perry. All those names being considered for the Penn State coaching gig.
Yeah, my alma mater would really like to get Peterson, and this might finally be the time where Peterson makes a move. Still looking at North Carolina as well, because of the way that Boise was just handled by the BCS. And it's not that Boise was not in the national championship game. The fact that they were passed over Virginia Tech, Michigan, teams that they were better than, deserved to be in a BCS bowl more than. This may finally be the time that tells Peterson, you know what, it is time for me to move on. I want a chance to be able to play for a championship. He'd have to go to a place like Penn State to do that.
Yeah, I mean, if you read Peterson's comments today, there was an article I read this morning. He's furious. I mean, he's had it with Boise. You know, 2 years in a row that Boise's coming to Las Vegas. Last year they played Utah. Utah was just as flat as they were. They won that game 26-3. This year, a matchup. You know, this is Boise State. They went to beat Georgia, you know, a team that played in the SEC championship game. Boise beat them. And here they are. You know, they lose one game. Kicker! You know, it wasn't like Boise really lost a game. They were manhandled. You know, kicker missed a field goal. 39-yarder. They had in position to win. And here they are playing, again, pre-Christmas. Peterson's, he was furious. And I don't blame him. It's probably going to result in him looking for other gigs.
Of course, while the kicker missed the field goal, the defense gave up 35. So, let's go to Arkansas State now. They lose Hugh Freeze, who just had a terrific season in turning their program up a notch. Hugh Freeze now heading to Mississippi, apparently going to be taking a lot of his assistants with him. For the bowl game, it's going to be running backs coach David Gunn taking over. Not sure if he's going to head on to Ole Miss or not afterwards, but he'll be taking over their short list right now. Randy Fichter, the Steelers quarterback coach, who may be favoring Memphis more than Arkansas State. Greg Sudara, the LSU offensive line coach, formerly had been the offensive line coach here at Arkansas State, also coached with Urban Meyer at Bowling Green, and Chris Schelfo, who once upon a time had a winning season at Tulane, which looks awfully good now in retrospect. Schelfo currently the Atlanta Falcons tight end coach. That's a short list for Arkansas State. They figure to make a hire long before the bowl game, but for now, running backs coach David Gunn will be the guy in charge.
When we come back, we're going to put all of this to work for you. It's money time.
Hi, I'm Chris Phillips from Talk Tales, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And if you stop by the studio, our producer Scott's going to buy everybody a drink.
Okay, guys, it's money time. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's go to Madison Square Garden. We've got a pair of great games on TV tonight at MSG. Let's start with the first one. We have Missouri -8, total 149 at MSG against, I don't know, what do we talk about Villanova? Disappointing? Mediocre? How do we describe them? What's the appropriate adjective to start this Villanova Wildcats team?
How about a little short and shorthanded? It's a Villanova team that doesn't have a whole lot of size inside. In the last game, because Maurice Sutton, their best post defender's out with a dislocated left thumb, probably out till the Big East play starts. So in the last game, a lot of stretches where they've had four guards and a forward on the court at the same time, which makes for a fun matchup tonight, though, because Missouri is not that big. They've got a lot of good perimeter players. You're going to see a lot of running, a lot of up and down play here. There is a temptation, though, that as good as Missouri has looked so far this year, when you get Jay Wright and the type of kids he has at Villanova, +8 on a neutral court, on a court they've played at before, they're going to be a little more comfortable in the Garden perhaps than Missouri. Those Villanova kids compete pretty hard, and 8 is a different level than we're used to seeing Missouri at. They're saying Missouri would be a solid road favorite if the game was at Villanova. They're saying Missouri would be laying 13 if it was a home game. Yeah, maybe they've stretched this a little bit too far. And again, when we talk about riding hot teams, fading cold teams, as Teddy had talked about those market adjustments, here's a case where Missouri has looked awfully good, but everyone has seen the fact that they've looked awfully good.
Yeah, and we talked about some of these Big East teams in this road underdog role. You start to get that +6, +7, +8, Georgetown going to Alabama, nearly winning that game. We saw Marquette getting the job done against Wisconsin this past weekend. Tend to be a little bit attracted to these type of quality dogs, particularly in a neutral site venue. But at the same time, you talked about some of the issues for Villanova. And, boy, this Missouri team, I know that there's been a different coaching change, obviously, between Mike Anderson, who went on to take the job at his alma mater at Arkansas, and Frank Haith, who came over from the Miami Hurricanes this past year. But we haven't seen a talent drop-off. We haven't seen an execution drop-off. And the one thing that Missouri's done early on in the season to ensure that they're going to cover point spreads like this one, boy, they're hitting free throws. How about 80% from the charity stripe so far this year? Nova's not far behind at 75%. So two really good free throw shooting teams. They might be free throating, but if they are, I don't want to hear about it. bottom line is there's a chance for perhaps some scramble points in this one at the end, Dave, huh?
So we're not done with this game yet. We're going to talk about it again in a few minutes. You can probably guess where we might be going. But before that, let's go to the nightcap. Nice matchup here. Washington against Marquette. Marquette, a 7.5-point favorite, total 156.5. Like Missouri, here's a line that's been inflated a little bit because Marquette has gotten out of the gate dynamically. That was a terrific performance at Wisconsin on Saturday. If you were watching football instead, go back and take a look at that game, because that's Marquette finding out, most players said, not until game day, that Junior Cadogan, the starting point guard, was going to be suspended by Buzz Smith. So you go out there into one of the toughest places to win in college basketball without your starting point guard, and they controlled Wisconsin wire to wire. Now, there are a couple of elements here. The markets go up. They say, okay, we think you're real good. We adjust. But at the same time, could Marquette also come out a little bit flat? That was an awfully big win for them Saturday. Do they bring the same emotion tonight?
Well, you want to be an athlete. You know, this is just a beautiful one right here. Washington Huskies, they're going to spend the week in New York City. All right, as a basketball team, they play Duke on Saturday. Well, what are they going to do during this week? Well, they're going to play a couple basketball games. Oh, and they're also going to get 2 credits apiece for taking a class on from the school's drama department. So I guess they're going to see a play and write a paper and get 2 credits for it. Nice work, guys. Good to be a college athlete. But the bottom line for this Washington team, I mean, Marquette, they play fast, they play smart. Washington, well, they play fast. And when you look at the scheduling dynamic here, and this is there's a couple of quotes that I want to talk about, but the one here is Buzz Williams, the Marquette Golden Eagles head coach, talking about the transition from playing a team like Wisconsin to playing a team like Washington all in a span of 72 hours. Quote, "The only way you can grow up is when people are standing on top of your neck and you have to figure out a way to breathe. That's life. That's not basketball. That's just a microcosm of life. It's not going to be easy. So what's the best way to grow up? Well, the best way to grow up is to have someone hit you in the mouth and see if you can respond." Now, Washington plays really fast. They play a lot faster than we do. We played the slowest team in the country on Saturday on the road, and we'll play the 10th fastest team in the country at the world's most famous arena 72 hours later. It's definitely a distinct change.
So where do we go tonight for the best profits? Let's go back to Game 1 in Madison Square Garden. Play of the daytime is going to take us to a Missouri-Villanova game that we think is going to be played at an extremely fast tempo. Both teams are aggressive. Both teams will attack the opposing team's presses to try to score, not just to get the ball to midcourt. And we like the way that Jay Wright plays as an underdog for this setting. You go back the last couple of seasons, 11-4 to the over the last 15 times they've been an underdog in a game. They will attack aggressively. Teddy mentioned both teams shoot their free throws very well. Means a lot of opportunities for free points as the game goes on, because when you got a fast pace and teams are aggressive, you get a lot of whistles. So let's look to go over that 149 in the Villanova-Missouri game as our play of the day.
Come on, have some fun with it, Dave. Over the total.
I thought you were too sick for that.
I just made him jump. I'm never too sick to say that. That's too much fun. And I didn't have any show, and I don't think I had many looks like this over the course of the show. But thank you again for spending taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll be back again tomorrow.